Let's make it happen, Captain.
From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Gov Maharaj.
Welcome to Defrag. Well, we are still in the small room so far.
I'm feeling claustrophobic. Are you feeling claustrophobic?
Just a little bit, but I like it. I like being close. So I got a picture here. You can see some of the construction that's going on in our building. So this is what Channel 9's studio looks like right now. It's kind of gutted. That blue kind of teal wall that you see there, behind that wall is our studio. And the plastic that is screwed in over the door keeps all the dust out, and it also keeps us out of there. So can't even get necessary cables and things that we need, but that's all right.
You
We're
can
doing
see
okay.
The lines here on the floor where the walls, these used to be additional offices.
Yeah.
Or workspaces, I think, right? This was right outside of Channel 9.
Yeah,
the
used
workspaces.
To be. And now it's a big empty space. So,
yeah.
So that is the progress report. And I'm still sending out 9 guys. I wasn't able to get to the box that has all of our 9 guys in it. So I'm a little bit delayed in sending out guys. But we'll get that done soon.
Our 9 guys are being held hostage by the old building?
You know, I don't call it held hostage, but they are inaccessible. So there's that. So, yeah, all right. So let's start the show.
We had to mount a rescue.
Yeah. Follow-up from Robert on the last show. Thanks for your explanation on the upgrade. It was a VL issue. I never realized that I couldn't be updated like other licenses. I had another MSDN account and was able to update the machine via USB drive and a different key. So, yeah, that was just an update from the last show.
That was a problem on if you've installed via MSDN, depending on what kind of key that you have, you wouldn't be able to upgrade through the store.
Yeah.
And that's for volume license keys.
Next from Eduardo. Sometimes, maybe once a month when I start my computer in the morning, as it happened today, the following screen is shown. And it says, Windows failed to start. A recent hardware software change might be the cause. To fix the problem, insert your media, blah, blah, blah. I've not installed any new software or hardware recently. As before, I simply booted the computer and it worked again. No more problems are found during normal working day. No disk read failures are detected. Interesting part is I have two brand new 256 gig Samsung SSDs, one for data and one for the operating system. It looks like the configuration file was not found during the booting process. How can it be? What do I do to debug and fix this problem?
That one's actually really interesting for the BCD store not being found. What you can do, it may literally just be a timing issue. If there's an option in your EFI or your BIOS to delay the amount of time that it takes in order to find the drive.
Yeah.
It used to be in the old days there was the spin-up delay for platter drives. Depending on how old your system is, it might actually require that delay to get your drive initialized mm-hmm. in time. Either that or I'd be looking for, you know, if you had other USB keys that are plugged in, to unplug those. But the fact that it rectifies itself after a reboot, especially a warm reboot, really does tell me that it's a timing issue. You can look for BIOS updates as well for your system.
Okay.
That may remedy it, or firmware updates for your drive itself.
And so far, once a month, that's, you know, not the end of the world as far as I'm concerned. At least it wouldn't be for me.
Just
anything
really interesting
that you need to be concerned about here, because if he is able to do a warm boot and everything is fixed, is it look like a wobbly system or anything that...
There's just not enough information to tell.
Yeah.
I mean, they're brand new drives. I'm really hoping that they're not failing by
mm-hmm.
now, but you never know. You could have just got a bum drive right to begin with. You can't really base it on age of the drive.
Yeah.
There's just some drives that don't make it out the gate properly, too.
Okay. Well, Eduardo, keep us informed on this, and we'll help you out and do whatever we can to help fix that. So, next one from Lou. This to you, Gove. What brand and model case are you using for your Surface? It doesn't look like anything I've seen before for a Surface. Are you using some secret?
Not secret.
Yeah.
No, not
no.
secret. It's this basic leather or pleather folio case. It's on Amazon.
Price is right.
Yeah, it's nice and cheap. There's multiple different colors, which is actually kind of cool, so you can personalize it. When I got mine, they did not have orange. I really should get that one.
Yeah, you should.
It works pretty well. A little holder here for the stylus. Accesses all your ports, no problem. This I can actually use in bed a lot easier on my lap. because of how the front part folds, you have this whole section for stability on your lap versus just the edge of the back plate. And comfortable. I mean, it works really well. I like having a spot to keep the stylus.
Awesome. All right, there you go. From Rasso, it says, I have some questions about Windows 8.1 upgrade. One, and let's just take these one at a time.
Sure.
I have Windows 8 Pro System Builder Edition. Is there another way to upgrade besides the Windows Store?
If you want it to be free? No. You'd have to purchase the upgrade, which is, I don't know, $99, $100, something like that, if you didn't want to do it through the store.
All right. Number two, if my SSD dies, do I have to install Windows 8 first and then apply the upgrade?
Yes.
Okay. Number three, I want a clean install of 8.1. How can I do that?
You'd have to buy it. Or I believe that there are ways that you can download the ISO. There's a bunch of explanations on the net. There is also MSDN where you can download the ISO. That's basically the way that I would do it.
Okay. And the last question, I use SkyDrive desktop client with directory symbolic links. If I change a file in a linked directory, changes are not synced immediately. Why? To upload changes, I have to restart SkyDrive. Is there another workaround?
SkyDrive is simply not symlink aware. It's not a feature that they deemed as important. Mm-hmm. So because symlinks are just at a lower level in the stack than what SkyDrive is, when you update them, SkyDrive just doesn't know about the notification. It doesn't see it. So it doesn't update.
Okay. All right.
And what you could do is instead use libraries, which I think are a lot easier to use for SkyDrive than symlinks anyways.
Point. Yeah. Okay. All right. Next from Philip. I have an HP Microserver N40L and spent ages trying to do the Windows 8.1 install from DVD. I have BIOS 0729 2011, latest version for it, and it will always hang on devices getting ready at 33% or 50%, even with no USB devices or network cable, et cetera, installed. The only way this device will install Windows 8.1 is if you disable embedded NIC. Even after install, you cannot enable the NIC again as it will not boot. I've had to disable the NIC and use Wi-Fi to run Windows 8.1.
This is actually the second response that I've seen to this, and we're actively looking into this. It's a problem with the driver that's included in box from HP, well, not specifically from HP, but from the OEM that supports this NIC, and we're going to look at what we can do to fix that. But in the meantime, honestly, the best that you can do is keep it disabled and use a USB or another PCI NIC.
Okay. All right, from James. Here's the problem. The laptop ran Windows 7 fine and is only 4 years old. It might be that something went wrong in the upgrade and that's why it's heating up. It will stay on all day just fine, but once I try to run the many updates it has, it heats up and shuts down. I notice when this happens, there are two SVC hosts running up the processor, but it often shuts down before I have time to troubleshoot it. Then anything I change seems to not stick since it doesn't have a chance to shut itself down correctly. I'm pretty set against going back to Windows 7 unless I cannot solve this problem. Questions, what can I send you so that you can see if maybe there's something causing a shutdown that I can fix? What would you do to troubleshoot the issue?
First of all, I would want to see your system and application event logs. Second one would be, what you might have to do is go back to HP site and look for any chipset drivers. And install those over top. They might have gotten dropped in the upgrade or lost their configuration in the upgrade. Especially if you can repair this on a clean install, I'm willing to bet that you're going to hit the exact same problem on a clean install. Did you actually say what model?
Model number is not here.
Okay.
No, HP G62.
G62, okay. So we can take a look and see if we have anything like that in a lab and see if we have a...
Try to recreate
the issue. But like I say, the best thing that you can do is boot from a VHD so you don't have to wipe it out clean and see if you can repro it with a VHD. Mm-hmm. The other thing that you can try, and definitely a very temporary scenario, would be to reclock your CPU. So if you go into your power options, you change your plan settings, you go to advanced, and you will see what I did
on mine, I'm pretty sure I've got it set up here. Change your maximum processor state to something less than 100.
Yeah.
You know, take it down to 50 if need be to reduce that load on your CPU and see if it won't generate as much heat. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing you're getting some sort of thermal events. See if your BIOS actually logs these events as well. Sometimes if you go into the BIOS and there's a log there, you can see that it's potentially shutting down for whatever reason. But yeah, so try changing your CPU clock to clock it down. Look for chipset updates. Even if they say that it's still installed on your system, reinstall them. It's either going to come from HP or Intel.
Yeah, okay. Cool, and then I've got one issue that I came across this weekend that I'll just throw in the mix. So you know at home I'm running the four platter drives in RAID 0 for my big 8 terabyte drive. Mm-hmm. And then I've got two SSDs running
throwing
RAID
caution 0. To the wind.
Yeah, whatever. Mm-hmm. We'll just, yeah.
We'll call that a scratch machine. That's really what it is.
This is my home production machine. So this
well,
is
we'll call it a scratch machine.
Yeah, well, it may as well be. Well, I was doing a bunch of uninstalls, just a whole bunch of cleanup on the system, and then it all of a sudden it said it needed to restart. Mm-hmm. And when I restarted, one of the four drives, it said, had failed. Mm-hmm. But when I restarted, everything was fine. I just had to mark that drive again. It's okay. Mm-hmm. But when I restarted, it did a scan disk, and it took a very long time. It's an 8 terabyte drive.
Yeah, that's going to take a while.
But it stopped at 43% for a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. So I was concerned. I was like, should I shut it down? Of course not. Never want to do that. But I end up letting it go for, you know, a couple of hours, and it was fine.
Okay.
And so now everything's fine, and I should be concerned, I'm sure, right?
Who knows? Your drive could actually be going.
Yeah. Brand new 2 terabyte drive. I can't imagine that it's bad. And I
is
was
it a
hoping
green
it
drive?
Was just. No.
Judging by that
no,
look.
It's not. I have to think about it for a minute, but it's not. It's a Toshiba drive, and it's not green.
It's not a green drive?
Yeah.
Okay. Make sure you got backups.
Yeah, that's what I do, and that is the plan. So do a nightly backup. So I'll be okay. All right, pick of the week time. Pick of the week. And here's my pick of the week. It is this YouTube video, and it's a guy with why he loves his Surface 2 tips and tricks. So he goes through some of the stuff that he does with his Surface 2. You got to remember, this is the, it's not called the RT machine anymore, but this is running Windows RT. It's very interesting when you see some of the stuff that he's doing compared to like competitor devices like iPad. So he's like writing in Word, you know, while he's playing a video over on the side. He's got hooked up to an external monitor.
Yeah.
He's using a mouse and all the things that you would expect to do from a normal computer, and he's doing it with this, you know, basically a Windows tablet. So.
Well, the voice recognition part was.
Oh, that was really cool too.
That was very cool. It. I don't think I've seen any advertising at all on the voice recognition. This actually shows, you know, the power of this little device where you hook up a USB hub with your different keys. Keyboard, if you wanted, you know, full size keyboard. That's pretty powerful.
Yeah.
And it's able to drive a full on, you know, 27 inch HD display.
Yeah.
You know, without any issues at all.
Yeah. So it's interesting if you want to go watch us just to get some of the tips that he's doing and some of the different things you can do with this that you might not even know about, like voice recognition
or wireless printing.
Wireless printing, that was another good one. But yeah, check out the video. It's really cool. Sean Ong is the guy that put this together. So yeah, props to you. That was awesome. And your pick of the week is keeping safe online.
Yeah, so I've been feeling some questions recently about, you know, what do I do to stay safe online? There's, of course, various degrees of what it takes to stay safe online.
And what is stay safe? What do you mean? Like not get your identity stolen, not get a virus, all those?
I think the baseline definition is to ensure that your information is going to the places where you expect your information to go to.
Yeah.
And it's to not have software that is potentially running that has the ability to steal this information or misappropriate this information. It's really about being aware of your surroundings. Like, I think about being safe online the same way as I think about being safe while driving or while walking on the street or in a foreign country, right? Mm-hmm. It's just being alert. It's being aware of
what is going on around you, or you know, in the online case of what's going on, say, in your browser.
Yeah.
You can tell I use IE. I use IE at home. I use Chrome for things when I'm trying to do a comparison between IE and Chrome. There's a few different features with IE, especially with 8.1, and I believe I've talked about some of them before. There is the enhanced protected mode that comes with 8.1.
Yeah.
Which is really handy. That runs IE as an app container, which is very similar to the way that Windows Store apps run. It's a sandbox that helps contain anything to escape it. Nothing is there really to prevent other things that are running at a higher privilege from reading into it.
Yeah.
But it does help prevent escape from the sandbox. But some of the things that I like to do, for example, is minimize or at least review on a constant basis what add-ons I have installed.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Shockwave is Flash. You don't really have to worry about that one anymore in Windows 8 and higher because Flash is delivered through Windows Update.
Yeah.
We have a really good relationship between Microsoft and Adobe on getting Flash updates. But I disable things like accelerators, you know, anything that runs within the IE process.
Mm-hmm.
I try to disable anything that's not actually required. I turn on tracking protection, which is actually a really cool feature.
And what does that do?
So tracking protection is basically, it prevents websites from reading from your temporary files. It's in a lot of ways like the ad links that mm-hmm. that are in web hosts that gather data about you,
yeah.
like what things that you're clicking on. These tracking protection lists are basically there to blacklist anything that it thinks is gathering data,
mm-hmm.
Which you know I like to turn on. This particular machine is relatively newly set up. I haven't turned it on yet, but I also don't do a lot of surfing with this machine.
Yeah, one of the things that drives me crazy is when I go to some oddball site mm-hmm. and it's got an ad for something that I just looked for
exactly
somewhere else.
Right.
So, yeah.
So, you know, that's one of the features. If I'm doing online banking, say, you know, Bank of America, one of the things that you can do is drag it. And this opens up basically an a separate IE browsing window just for Bank of America.
Yeah.
What you can also do is if you're, I don't want to say extra paranoid because it's not really a paranoia thing, but if you go to safety and you choose in private browsing, which disables a whole bunch of things, it doesn't store any data, cookies, temporary files, other data, and you go here to Bank of America, you can now take this link and pin it, and you have this as your browsing window. So
yeah.
No data is actually being stored. Now you will have to put in your online information all of the time.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing to do is, you know, if you know that you're doing online banking, I run as a standard user at home, right? I will, even if I'm feeling extra paranoid, I have created yet another standard user just for online banking. If I'm going to say, you know, for whatever reason, if I'm in a hotel room somewhere,
yeah,
you know, and I'm really extra paranoid. If I'm in a hotel room, do I just connect to their Wi-Fi and go have at it? No, I use VPN, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's numerous VPN providers out there that will help protect the flow of information, because the one thing that is very difficult to protect against is man-in-the-middle attacks.
Yeah.
Right?
So the guy next door to you in your hotel room plugged his router into the internet and he's running this
exactly.
hotel.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly the problem. You know, HTTPS is one level of protection. A VPN
yeah.
is yet another level of protection. And that's, you know, to help mitigate the external factors mm-hmm. that are around you. The other thing to do is just, you know, take a look at what you're running. Just see what
yeah.
processes are running. Is there anything you don't actually recognize that's been running?
Or anything that you can just whittle out, because everything you take out of there is probably going to help you a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, generally speaking, you don't want to nuke things that are, you know, part of the OS, but look for things that are running as you.
Yeah.
Right? Those are the ones that you have to worry about, because generally speaking, if you have malware on your system and it's already running as like local system, it means that it has admin privileges, mm-hmm. and you're basically owned. Like, you're done at that point. But there's plenty of malware out there that just runs as you, and is still able to have access to all of the things that are running on your desktop.
Yeah.
Those, I think, are a lot more worrisome. And they don't always trigger AV software or malware software, because they could be very new, it could be very innocuous. Like, think of a script that runs, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you can have a script that runs a DLL that is very innocuous. It could be running a WMI query in order to get information, in order to dump state and then send it across the wire. Like, to write malware that actually doesn't look like malware is not that difficult. Mm-hmm. But again, look for things that are running as your user, and just take a look at what doesn't need to be running or what looks out of the ordinary.
Yeah.
So run as a standard user. You can run as a completely separate user if you're doing online banking. Use in private mode. Pin the shortcut to your taskbar, which creates its own browsing experience. And what you don't want to do is navigate away from the site from within this browsing experience. Like, when you're done, you're done. You close it out and you go back to whatever it was that you were doing before.
Mm-hmm. I think one of my best tips for being safe online is if you get an email that says, hey, you know, you've been compromised here, go click here and change your password, don't ever do it for any reason. And I got an email like that recently from Adobe. They had an issue where something happened and lost some data. Mm-hmm. And so they sent a real email out, said, hey, you should change your password. And I got that and I was like, I'm not falling for it. And I don't care if it is real. I'll just go to Adobe and log in there.
Right.
I just don't, even if it says the right URL, just don't even bother clicking any link in any email if you can avoid it.
Yeah, no, that's actually really good advice. Just be very wary of emails, what you're clicking on. Usually,
you don't have to click their link to change your password. You can just log on to the site and do it there.
Yeah, in most email programs, if you hover over the link, it should show you in the tooltip exactly what it is that you're linking to.
Yeah.
Now, can you protect against a web host that has since been compromised? That's actually really, really difficult, mm-hmm. if not impossible, to actually protect against.
Yeah.
You know, you have to have some level of trust with whatever it is that you're doing. It's kind of like, you know, you take the analogy away and an elaborate con has been set up where, you know, a storefront looks like a particularly legitimate business. Mm-hmm. You go up, you try to buy something, and they've skimmed your credit card, mm-hmm. right? You can't really protect against that. It looks correct, right?
Yeah.
They can print out a number of Better Business Bureau certificates, and, you know, it can all look really good, mm-hmm. but, you know, in the end, it'll be very difficult to actually circumvent.
Okay. Any other tips or?
Those are my main ones. That's what I do all the time. That's what I'm always aware of. You know, if I'm doing online banking, you know, look at the site. Does it look drastically different than what it looked like the last time you did it? Mm-hmm. I know various banking sites has alerts that you can set up to text back to your phone.
Yeah.
Two-factor auth, really, really important, I think, in today's world. I know my phone has an authenticator app that runs through on a timed basis new key codes.
Mm-hmm.
So when you log in with your username and password, you also have to enter
like
the
secure key thing.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, keep looking for those types of offerings by your vendors, and, you know, if they don't have it, pressure them. You know, ask them, we want this. This is important mm-hmm. to us. We need to be able to trust you. And right now, the every day goes by and we keep hearing new stories and we're losing trust.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to be paranoid, but I also want to ensure that I'm doing whatever it is that I can to have the safest experience.
I would be paranoid. I wouldn't have you any other way.
Just because you're paranoid doesn't mean someone's not out to get
that's
you.
That's true, Nixon. All right, that's the show for this week. If you have questions, you can send them to defragshow@microsoft.com, and we will see you next week.
Take care.